This is Decline to Stay.
Hello and welcome to the Decline to State Internet Radio Stream, the show in which we get together to discuss the ups and downs of life outside the Matrix. Decline to State is proud to bring you one of the surprisingly few netcasts in which the hosts do not support acts of aggression against you. If at any point you would like to call in and weigh in on the conversation, please contact Skype user Decline to State with a text message, and we'll do our best to get you on the air. If you are interesting, we may keep you on. That's Decline to State, spelled out one word, no punctuation. You can find us on the web at declinefm.com, where you will find a link to the live chat. And we are even going to reward your participation by entering you in a raffle to win a free book. For a more leisurely but less interactive experience, plug in Decline to State on iTunes. And if there's a topic you want to hear discussed on a later show, please submit to r/declinetostate on reddit.com. Links to both our live stream and archive episodes can be found at both declinefm.com and r/declinetostate on Reddit. I'm Ronald McPaul, your beacon of freedom in the heart of the Silicon Valley. And as always, I'm joined by my handsome co-casters. And I'll let them go around the horn and introduce themselves on this special Wednesday.
Hey guys, this is Eternal. How y'all doing?
This is Kwashiorkor.
This is Wrong Opinion, broadcasting to you from the Rust Belt.
All right. Well, I think we have a great show lined up today. I wanted to start off by talking about some, like, I guess the recent events in the financial market, if that's okay with you guys. I'm sure some of you are in the audience are already aware of the announcements over the past couple weeks from the Fed, and basically announcing to the rest of the world that they're going to print money forever and with no end in sight, starting, I think it's $40 billion of housing securities or something they're buying up every month, which I can't do math. What is that a year? 12 times 4?
All I know is that I really hope that we actually get to see Ben go on a helicopter ride as part of this effort.
Helicopter Ben.
It's one of my fantasies. Yeah, I hope to get a concussion from having $1,000 brick dropped on my cranium unexpectedly.
Remember, they're going to install the printing press right into the helicopter eventually. It'll be super efficient.
Technology.
My calculator upside down just says boobies. That's all I got. I don't know the answer.
I was just going to say, for the audience who doesn't know, there's a silly YouTube video out there.
Decline to State, where you can get mature commentary on serious financial matters involving you.
Yeah. In any case, the Fed it's pretty much announced that they're going to buy up $40 billion of housing bonds at minimum every month, which means $40 billion are just being printed no problem every month.
And Eternal, is this on top of their plan, I guess, up until, I don't know, when, 2013 or 2014, to keep the interest rate low? Because I'm pretty sure that involves...
Oh, interest rates are zero permanently.
Yeah, like, that's pretty more money too, but this is like on top of it, right?
Yeah, this is something in addition on top of it. I don't even know. I'm trying to think, like, are they doing still any of that? I know they had Operation Twist before. They had QE 1 and 2, and they were doing other things in addition to that that were more under the radar. I don't know how... Well, I guess nobody really knows how much they're actually doing, but I'm assuming that the Fed is still doing some things, you know, behind the scenes, and this is just one new program that's popped up.
Yeah, I wish I could be one of the people who were the first ones to get their hands on that money, because, you know, when they first start printing this money out and giving it to, you know, friends of the Bernac or Helicopter Ben or whatever we want to call them, that money is still kind of worth the old value. And then once it gets kind of spread around and we, you know, prices reach equilibrium, whatever fancy economic talk you want to put around it, then that money's worth less. And that's usually where I get it, I think.
Yeah, if you get it at all. And of course, remember, you don't just like get the money. You get the money because the bank has lent it to you and you owe it back with interest. So, you know, unlike the major banks who just literally get the money for free, it's like, what, 0.25% interest, 0.75% interest or something. It's really just free money. And they can park it at the U.S. government and treasuries if they wanted to. and just make a profit.
They're holding on to a record number of reserves, too, so they're not loaning the money out like they were before the crash. So, you know, the money's being pumped, and it's like just filling up this balloon inside of the bank. So at some point, they're going to say, we better start unloading this before inflation sets in, and then they'll be in a big rush to unload it all. You know, so then the money's going to be flowing, and I wish I could find the article I saw earlier today that said, you know, basically they're going to be behind the gun in turning it off. You know, it's easy to turn on the hot water. It's not so easy to turn it down when you're scalding, you know?
Yeah, well, the problem is that they screw up by even like a week. Think about, okay, here's how much they've raised the base money with all this QE stuff, with all the bond buying, how much base money has increased. It's increased by something around like 2 to 3 trillion, I believe. And base money before they started doing all this stuff was something around 1.5 trillion. I believe that sounds correct. It might be off a little bit in the numbers, but it's at least in the ballpark. And obviously, you know, when you do something like that in a normal, healthy economy where that money flows out as quickly as you print it, when all that money goes into the economy, what's that going to do to prices? Prices will expand by 200%, 250%, 300% in a year. I mean, they're going to explode. So what happens if the economy manages to get off its feet at all and that money starts leaking out? God forbid, you know, the Fed is late on capping the flow. We'll have price inflation that we haven't seen ever, really, maybe since like the 30s.
So what you're talking about is, at least, you know, and you said those numbers could be not perfect, but at least the amount of money that's being added is, you know, a sizable portion, you know, perhaps even, you know, double the size, but at least it's a sizable portion of the money that was currently existing. So doing that simple math, or, you know, we like to think it's simple math, I guess, you're going to have just, you know, a lot of inflation or a lot of change in prices that we're going to see.
So certainly, you can already see the effects going to have. I heard on the radio today, there was an announcement made, you know, because I guess, you know, the media isn't lockstep with this, which is that, housing prices are starting to go up and are at the highest they've been in like 5 years. Therefore, we're in a recovery. That's literally their thinking. Instead of
maybe for some people, it's a recovery.
It's a recovery for two people. It's a recovery for banks, and it's a recovery for people who over-leveraged their homes for debt and are now screwed because they took out way too much on equity. I mean, that's it. It's not a recovery for anybody who wants to buy a house. It's not a recovery for anybody who, you know, is looking at their adjustable rate mortgage and saying, God forbid interest rates go up ever. It's not a recovery for the average person, and certainly it isn't creating more jobs or anything. Actually, I heard today they also said that this month, at least, housing purchases are down, but the price is up, which tells you one thing and one thing only, which is that there's inflation in the market. Now, you could say, well, maybe this is just a natural inflation where, you know, prices are kind of fluctuating back up to where they're supposed to be. But no, I don't think so. I think it's actually just extra money's leaking out into the economy. The Fed taking its action to buy tons of housing bonds is forcing the price higher. And we're just going to see a second housing bubble. I really think we're going to see a second housing bubble at this point.
You think we're blowing it up in the same spot, maybe? That'd be interesting to see.
Well, okay. Oh, you were going to say?
Yeah, former president of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank, Richard Fisher, in remarks before the Harvard Club of New York City on the 19th, said, this much we do know, our engine room is, he's using an analogy here too, our engine room is already flush with $1.6 trillion in excess of private bank reserves owned by the banking sector and is held by the 12 Federal Reserve banks. Trillions more are sitting on the sidelines in corporate coffers. On top of all that, a significant amount of underemployed cash or fuel for investment is burning a hole in the pockets of money market funds and other non-depository financial operators. This begs the question, why would the Fed provision to shovel billions in additional liquidity into the economy's boiler when so much is presently laying fallow? He continues later on.
That's the real question, though. I mean, why the heck would they continue printing money when printing money doesn't work? It hasn't worked so far.
It's
not going to continue to work. And you know, the Austrian school has proven that, you know, once it gets to a certain point, that new money printing isn't going to spur growth. You're not going to create any more growth. You're doing more damage by effectively manipulating the economy and moving resources away from productive means to a non-productive means when you print money. That it doesn't matter that there's extra credit available. It's not a liquidity problem. It's not the Keynes' famous liquidity trap. It's not anything like that. This is an issue where people are afraid out of their mind to invest because there aren't good investments. And because nobody knows what's sound and what's not, because the government keeps pushing every little sector that it can get its hands on and screwing with market forces. Nobody knows what's going on because there's no price signals left. There's something that goes on when you have interest rates at 0%, which is nobody knows how much savings are worth, and people can't determine what investments are worth putting their savings into because, well, you know, savings are 0%. I mean, effectively, 0% interest means all investments are treated the same. All loans are treated the same. It's all free.
In preparing for this last FOMC meeting, I'm reading here, I specifically asked my corporate interlocutors for the following question. Quote, if your costs of borrowing were to decrease by 25 or more basis points, would this induce you to spend more on job-creating expansion? The answer from 9 out of 10 was no. The responses of those I surveyed are best summarized by the comments of one of the most highly respected CEOs in the country. Quote, we are in stall mode, stuck like Velcro, until the fog of uncertainty surrounding fiscal policy and the debacle in Europe lifts. So, you know, they're hanging on to this money because it makes sense to hang on to it because they don't know what's going to happen. They don't know what the government's going to do. They don't know what the Fed's going to do. They don't know what the rioting Spanish, Portuguese, or Greeks are going to do. Riots in Athens again, you know?
Yeah, it's really, it's uncertain times. There's a lot of regime uncertainty. I mean, that's the perfect word for it. Certainly, you know, with the election coming up, there's even more regime uncertainty because they don't know, is this guy going to stay or is his, you know, evil twin going to take over, you know, whatever. I'm not going to get into that nonsense, but certainly what's going on right now is people have all this money and have no idea what they can do with it to make profit. They could certainly spend it, but corporations don't care about spending money. Banks don't care about spending money. Only consumers care about spending money, and consumers don't have the money. The banks and the corporations do, and they're looking to make profit. And there's no more profit opportunities because the government has come in and made everything unprofitable.
So, is bad.
Well, because the
bourgeoisie and death to property.
You are taking profits at the expense of the workers. Return those funds.
No, yeah. And this is, people get really upset. Like, corporations are hoarding all the money. Why can't that money go to the workers? Like, if you take all that money, and money is nothing more than a store of value, which effectively money held by corporations is just claims the capital resources. If you take that money and you blow it, you are destroying an immense amount of capital resources that American corporations have. And then we won't be able to produce anything. And we already don't produce enough. So, you know, the fact of the matter is what we need to do is make production more lucrative. We need to facilitate people starting their own businesses again. And we need to make it so that people aren't afraid that if they go into business for themselves, they'll be burdened by regulations and just driven out by all the competition from government-subsidized corporations.
The former Fed chair, president continues, having weighed the various tactical and strategic arguments of his officer corps, our helmsman, meaning Bernanke, decided to call down to the engine room and request that more coal be shoveled into the economy's boilers. It was decided that further accommodation would be required in the form of mortgage-backed security purchases of $40 billion per month, and that Operation Twist and the reinvestment of principal payments from the current holdings of agency debt and MBS would be maintained. A total of $85 billion a month in additional accommodation would be added to the system at least through the end of the year. For added measure, the committee announced that if the outlook for employment does not improve substantially, it, quote, will continue its purchases of agency mortgage-backed securities, undertake additional asset purchases, and employ its other policy tools as appropriate until such improvement is achieved. It's like, you know, we're going to, the beatings will continue until morale improves.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm looking at this article from Bloomberg. I mean, Fed expands Operation Twist by $267 billion through 2012. So, I mean, they're basically saying, you know, nobody else wants our bonds anymore because they're not stupid. So we're just going to go in and buy as much as we can. I mean, the Fed is growing its books by astronomical measures. They never used to have books like these.
Now, I'm wondering how closely this approximates the situation to Argentina, because that's another thing in hindsight. It is depressing to see where the central bank or whatever government agency just kept trying to prop up the value of the currency, like you were just describing, Eternal. And, you know, it's like, I don't know, it kind of feels like you're scooping up water out of one side of a bathtub and dumping it into the other and hoping that you're going to make some progress and get into the bottom. So we've done a good amount of ranting on the Fed. I think before we become raging backwoods hillbilly libertarians that can't fit and function in society because we're just raging all the time, let's move on to one more market topic that Eternal wanted us to get to before his trademark fuzz started coming in, is gold prices. Quash Wrong, have you guys been watching this? You guys have any invested a little bit? Because we would expect it to come up a little bit, and I think it has been when, you know, as soon as the Fed made these royal decrees that they're going to start dumping money all over the place.
Yeah, I should have bought 2 months ago. I waited, and, you know, other stuff came up, and I waited too long. And then when it looked like there was going to be a QE3, I noticed that the price started going up. And sure enough, it went up. And now it's this past couple days, it's pulled back a little bit. And I'll see how it goes next week. But I'm probably going to trade in my nickels I've been saving and get some more gold.
Yeah, pretty much the instant, almost the instant that announcement was made, anybody who's paying attention to the market price on the ounce saw it shoot up from the neighborhood of the high 1500s to low 1600s, right up past the 1700 mark. I think it got pretty close to 1800 at one point. And really the price on the ounce of gold in comparison to the US dollar is not only a valuation of, you know, how valued is the dollar compared to an ounce of gold, but also I think is somewhat of a price on uncertainty. And certainly when QE3 was announced, there was quite a bit of extra uncertainty introduced into the market. So naturally, bastions of stability like gold and silver become much more valuable. Silver wasn't affected quite as much, however, as the gold price was. It has gone up in a similar fashion to gold as far as that QE3 announcement price goes, but I don't think it necessarily went up by perfectly proportionally. There's quite a bit of tampering in the silver market, though. If anyone pays attention to that, they'll remember back when silver broke $60, and then for some reason, certain traders connected with JP Morgan dumped a lot of paper onto the market, and next thing you know, within a week or so, price of silver went down to the high 20s and stayed there for a long time. It's just now creeping back up. So there's even a little bit of uncertainty in the price
of
silver.
Silver broke 60?
Because, I think it did.
I thought it was 40 that it
Well,
broke.
I'm talking about not this year, but a little over a year ago, I think it was.
I thought that silver topped out at about 45 or so. I think it broke 40, but I remember that happening still. It was really high, and then it dropped to like 20s really quickly. I mean, there's manipulation of these markets. There's also, think about it, I mean, it's also too much money floating around in markets in general, because people are forced into investing in the stocks through the inflation tax, forcing people to invest to save their money. The stock market, you know, getting all this fresh money that's passed down through the banks into various corporations and stuff through the Fed printing money. And of course, government forcing people to save through the 401ks to avoid taxation. So there's way too much money in the markets. Some of it can be funneled into gold, especially, the ETFs especially. So there's going to be a lot of paper following gold ETFs and silver ETFs out there.
Right. I saw there was something floating around on the internet earlier today, said that I think it was JP Morgan. I hope they don't sue me. It's some big organization who is shorting silver in the amount of twice the amount that's annually produced in the United States, something like 70 million ounces or something like that. So they've shorted it, and there's expectation the price may be going down because of that. Of course, we are not financial advisors, and these are unsighted rumors too. But
we don't tell anybody to make certain investment decisions, because apparently you don't even. I think if you're not a financial advisor, I don't know how it works. Peter Schiff would know that stuff. But I do know that now financial advisors can't even tell people advice unofficially. Can't talk to their, just people colloquially, because they can still get sued. It's crazy.
You can get sued for blinking these days.
The new suit of everybody versus everybody, representing everybody, Kyle's dad. Also representing the defending side of everybody, Kyle's dad.
Right. And by the way, I was just provided with information from Zom, who's lurking in the shadows here, that the market price didn't actually break 60. What I meant by that was
you're talking about silver, right?
Yeah, silver. At around that time, I was looking on eBay, and there were like 1 ounce silver eagles, for example, going on eBay and Craigslist for $60 plus. But the official price was, if you want to go by, what is it, 8MEX, I think? No, not 8MEX. COMEX. Yeah, COMEX was under that number. But I do remember seeing people commanding much higher prices than that.
And you're talking about dollars per ounce, right? Just to be clear.
Correct. United States dollars.
Yeah, well, that was because the Treasury was holding up minting of the Silver Eagles. And that was pushing the price up. They were like artificially withholding, from putting them into circulation.
So I don't know why that would drive the price up that much. I guess people, I don't know, maybe they valued the Silver Eagles for other reasons than them having silver in them.
Uncertainty.
It could have been a sign of something. I don't know.
Speculators.
Everything's driven by speculation these days.
I think generally they're somewhat valued more than regular silver rounds just because it's got the state stamp on it. I mean, there's some kind of guarantee in that it's, actually pure silver. We don't trust
that
them.
Thing. Get that out of my face.
I'm going to go drill into one of my Silver Eagles right now, and if it has a tungsten core, I'm going to flip my table.
Oh, right. Yeah, that brings us to one of our articles here. There's a gold bar that was traded up, I think it was in New York City, by a reputable vendor, and this guy drilled into it to test it, and it had a tungsten core. Tungsten is a very common metal. It is weighted almost exactly the same as gold, so it makes a good substitute. So what happens is that they take these gold bullion bars, and they'll drill in, fill it up, take out the insides and fill it up with tungsten. So it's just a sheet of gold on the outside wrapped around a huge brick of tungsten. And then they seal it back up and make it look like it was untampered. And it's a huge scam, apparently. And there's probably many, many more of them. It was enough to fool a reputable vendor. And my guess is there's a lot of them out there. So I wouldn't buy bullion. I would buy not just because it could be tampered with, but because bullion in general, I mean, one brick is enough to like buy a house. So it's probably not a good thing to have all your eggs in one basket. Buy coins, and definitely buy silver as well, because it's a lot safer to buy silver. You lose a silver coin, not the end of the world.
Don't rule out copper either. Incidentally enough,
platinum too.
I received a copper coin from an acquaintance at a voluntary Ohio meetup I went to not long ago. There's something called the American Open Currency Standard. I don't know if any of you guys have heard of it, but basically it's a standard that anybody can voluntarily opt into, and certain weights of precious metals and certain formats are valued at certain AOCS units. I thought that was kind of an interesting way of an alternative currency / accounting system. Just a neat little tidbit there.
And help me out, Wrong. What's the AOCS? I'm sorry, I'll be the layman guy here.
It stands for American Open Currency System, if I'm not mistaken.
That's news to me, too. I also wanted to move on to another related story that LDL managed to get to me. Apparently, there is a story coming out of the Telegraph, which is a UK newspaper. Dead recluse had $7 million worth of gold bars in house. So this guy dies and leaves $7 million of gold bars behind, along with like $150,000 of stocks and some cash and a bunch of other gold coins. And it was just some old dude who just didn't really talk to anybody and apparently was a bit of a conspiracy nut. They found several guns as well as several conspiracy theory books in the house.
It's nice of him to leave that much money for the government.
Yeah, and the government did not take it, surprisingly. They tracked down his nearest relative, a first cousin, and was...
I'm shocked at that.
Yeah, I guess she's getting a lot of money. A lot of money.
Well, good
and
for
she's
them.
Just a school teacher, so... Yeah.
I bet they will end up getting taxed for it somehow, though.
Yeah, well, there's going to be... I guess estate tax will be on that, because I guess the estate tax is back. It's not extended. It was 0% for a while, I believe, when Bush was in office, if I'm not mistaken, but I don't believe it's zero now. And of course, you know, what's the worst thing you could possibly do, you know, tax the dead? They can't even defend themselves. The dick move, I think.
Well, I mean, we're talking about the state here. Everything they do is a dick move by default.
Did you guys ever see that really good, I don't know if it was the original of the... Free to Choose series. I know they did a couple different attempts, but Milton Friedman has a bunch of good clips on YouTube that make the rounds, and the idea of taxing the dead came up, and I think, you know, it was like some neoliberal or some neoconservative, whatever.
Oh, yeah, someone who said tax it 100%.
Yeah, why don't we tax them because they're dead? So what difference does it matter? And he came back with something that I thought was kind of cool. He said, you know, people think we're an individual-based society. That's what America gets branded as a lot, but we're actually a family-based society. And he had his whole little spiel, and I don't know if you guys have observed this with your family members, but it's kind of true. You can see even people with less wealthy parents, they'll be saving money for their kids who have more. They just like...
Especially the people with less wealthy parents, actually.
Yeah. I mean, that's when it's really obvious, right? It's just, why don't you travel? Like, why? I mean, it's just more valuable to them. It's something, I guess I would imagine something biological, but that's my bent.
You know? Some parents actually care about their children, believe it or not. They'd like to see them succeed.
And they show it by spanking them vigorously.
Yeah. Not the same parents usually, though sometimes, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, they think they're doing the right thing. They're not spanking their kid because they hate them.
Not always.
Right.
But certainly the types of parents that are going to be saving for their kids' future and are going to try to keep their savings around even when they're dead for their kids. Yeah, those aren't the people that are spanking their kids out of malice.
Bosh, so. You got something to say?
Yeah, I found on Zero Hedge says that apparently there's 10 of these 10-ounce bars made of tungsten that have been discovered now. According to an article in the Post that Zero Hedge quotes, apparently as many as 10 were sold recently to unsuspecting dealers in Manhattan's Midtown Diamond District. The 10-ounce bars are hugely popular with investors. It's not known how many were sold to dealers or if any fake bars were purchased by the public. One gold dealer discovered that 4 of the 3x1-inch gold bars he bought, worth about $72,000 retail, were counterfeit. It has the entire street on edge, says Ibrahim Fadl, 62, who's been the owner of Express Metal Refining in Midtown. He purchased the 4 fake bars from a well-known Russian salesman with whom he has done business in the past. He became suspicious.
Russians.
Yeah. So he x-rayed him. He was suspicious that the guy was offering a discount for...
Was the discount yeah. Buy 10, get a nuclear warhead free?
Yeah. So the question is how many of them are out there? This, I think it had a Swiss mark on it. You know, but what nobody knows is how many are sitting in Fort Knox. How many are there and how many of them are real? And there hasn't been an audit of Fort Knox gold in, I don't know, like 50 years or something. So, you know, it could be a big empty box or maybe somebody like swapped these out. I mean, obviously this is a professional job. This wasn't some guy in his basement, you know, shaving down the, you know, hollowing out the bars. This is a real professional job. You've got to get the weight just right to match the volume inside, you know, that you hollowed out. You know, because the density of tungsten is close to gold, but not exact. So it takes a lot of work. You know, sure, it's probably worth it for $72,000, but you know, it could be a government doing this.
It could be someone in a basement. You could have a neckbeard, a Reddit neckbeard in there doing something professional. They have some high quality stuff they put together.
I suppose so. I just
time.
You know, but what's there'd be some really unhappy people and wealthy people who would definitely want to track you down. You know,
it's coming from Russia. It could be a mafia thing.
That's true. That's true.
Which is basically their government anyway. So, what's the difference? I don't know.
The mafia is honest about it.
Yeah, the mafia actually is pretty upfront.
as far as a concern, I'm curious for you guys of how much stuff like this worries you versus how much what the Fed and how much money we're printing. Does that worry you like several orders of magnitude more? Is it kind of just all in the same category, just fraud and money, you know, not being what it seems to be?
Well, I don't have too many of these 10-ounce bars. Actually, I don't have any. But so, you know, they're much less likely to do this to the 1-ounce. You know, I mean, the amount of work that would be involved, I think it just wouldn't be worth it for 1-ounce bars or bars or rounds, especially rounds. It'd be really hard to hollow them out and fill those in. So
How big is a 1-ounce round usually? That's pretty small, right?
Yeah, it's about the size of a half dollar, I'd say, a little thicker.
Yeah, I mean, that would take a lot of work. It's a really skilled, fine instruments to do that.
Yeah, I can't see it being worthwhile. Maybe if the price of gold went way up, you know, but I've read there are other tests. There's a sonic test you could do. There's other ways you could probably tell that it's genuine without drilling into it. And I suspect that, you know, if the fear grows, equipment for testing coins is going to be, you know, it's going to become a popular item to have. You know, because as the dollar fails, people are going to turn to alternative things like gold and silver. And if you don't have confidence in what you're trading, that's not going to work either. So,
well, that's not to say that everybody's going to have to go out and buy a gold truth tester or something. I would say rather banks will probably buy these. And obviously, you know, for those of us who would like to see gold and silver used as currency again, we're not indicating that we want everyone to carry around sacks of gold. What we want is something close to what Peter Schiff is offering overseas now, which is like a gold credit card, which is that there's physical gold stored somewhere, but it's, you know, credited digitally to an account and they run the same way that our money is now after that point, which is you could spend it in the 7-Eleven or something and you don't need to bring physical gold with you.
I think that's a good point you make, because I think a lot of outsiders or people not in our voluntarist community might get the impression that we're all people with just hard-ons for gold and silver and talking about what money is and what it's not and blathering on about how it's the true money. Yeah, we're not all leprechauns to the extent that I think people might guess. And if it's something that's stable, that's better than what we have, you know, assuming we're dumping all this money. And we want something that, you know, people can actually use though as well. So that's why we talk about these things on the show a lot. Bitcoin credit card maybe coming out, maybe it is. The Peter Schiff stuff, just something stable, something that we can predict and use to exchange so we can, you know, live our lives.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking for my gold, you know. I thought I had it around here, but I'll see. All I see is this little gray bits of metal.
Oh, I spoke too soon. We actually are becoming leprechauns.
I haven't had any charms in years. I shouldn't be experiencing this hallucination right now.
Hearts, stars, and horseshoes, clovers and balloons, pots and golden rainbows, and those red balloons.
That's how it works, Wrong. You could have a flashback from Lucky Charms at any time. It's just there in your cerebral spinal fluid.
That. Oh, I don't know,
I shouldn't
man.
Eat that. I can't eat that stuff anymore, though. Like, that's
isn't it
all
disgusting?
Grains
now?
And sugar and processed.
Yeah. Okay. I have to know who has done the thing where they just picked all the marshmallows out and made a bowl of marshmallow cereal. Who's done it?
Everyone, man.
Okay, that's good. At least we're honest.
There's another way to eat it. I wasn't aware of that.
The other stuff in there is just kind of like filler because the evil corporations want to rip you off from your marshmallows.
It's about time someone came up with a cereal that's marshmallows, like marshmallow-O's, and they're just like Cheerios, but only marshmallows.
I wonder if John Stamos likes marshmallow cereal because I think he's our caller.
You there, John?
Oh, yeah.
John?
John?
You're John on Decline Stamos. To State.
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, you should be turning down your radio now.
Maybe he's having a Lucky Charms hallucination and he dropped his phone or his headset or something. He's just kind of like staring at a rainbow that isn't really there.
John, are you there?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, yeah. There's just a lot of noise in the background or something. I don't know if you have a fan on or something.
Do you work in a lumber mill, John?
I kind of feel like we're doing the Clint Eastwood empty chair speech right now.
Yeah. Except we're not old and rattled, so we can't get away with it, right?
No, I think we can still get away with it because we're internet libertarians.
Well, I guess he's going to fix up his mic or something and maybe call back in a bit.
Yeah, call back.
Sounds like he's out on the highway. There was a truck coming.
Yeah.
So what else we got? You want to move to a different topic, guys? We got some other crazy stuff going on here we can talk about. We got
definitely. I was gonna say we could move on to something which bothers me greatly, and I'm feeling a little too good about myself right now. So the title is called Law Enforcement to Identify and Store Millions of Voices via Russian Biometric Software. So those Russians are at it again. I mean, they're just damn Russians.
Typical.
Everywhere.
Where's Bond when we need him?
Britain.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Problem solved. There you go.
We should have him on the show.
So the voices.
So with his eternal, how are they going to be able to track us on biometrically?
So I believe the way it works is, I'm not entirely sure how the system works at a super technical level, but it's unlike fingerprints where you've touched something or facial recognition biometrics where you have to have your image captured. Rather, it's a voice biometric print, everyone's voice patterns are very unique. I mean, human beings are excellent at picking up on voices. We can identify people just by their voice. There's all those little sonic characteristics, and you can create a computer system that can listen to those and pick up exactly who's talking. Now, this can be very useful commercially for something, say a text speech system for, say, maybe activating a car or a cell phone. You can have something like you could even have something like a universal translator, which is going to be like a text-to-speech and speech-to-text type device, and have two people talking into it and it recognizes who the speakers are. And there's a lot of great things you can do with it commercially. But this is a system that's going to be used to identify people for the surveillance state, and that's not a good thing.
Can we fool it by using pirate voices, maybe?
Yarr, me thinks so.
It's only 40% accurate with pirate voice. Actually, speaking of which, they give you a few figures so you get an idea in the article of how good this is and what the technology is at this point. So basically, you can take it how much fear you should have. It says, when combined, there is a 90% voice match to identification accuracy within 15 seconds. However, according to VoiceGrids, I think that's the company's, key figures, that's in quotes, it only takes 3 seconds is the minimum required speech pattern for analysis. In 5 seconds, it can search match 10,000 voice samples. 10 seconds is the average time for feature extraction. I'm not sure what they mean by feature, but maybe some component of voice. And it executes up to 100 simultaneous searches. So it's getting kind of powerful. One thing from a Eternal, even from a commercial standpoint, I'm wondering if it kind of concerns me that I could have coworkers figuring out that I do a radio show, because up till now I don't mention that I talk about such things.
I don't know. I'm just thinking, like, is it something where everything is that the NSA records or other intelligence agencies records, are they going to be put into a giant database where people are going to have them compared? Like, so they can have on file your voice print and then say, oh, I know exactly who this guy is. I've identified his speech characteristics. Let's go get him. You know, if he says something like over a phone call or I can understand how it can be used well. The thing that bothers me greatly is that it's in the hands of a monopoly, which makes it completely outside the realm of civilian control. I mean, this thing is going to go completely nuts. And I fully expect it to be something like a Minority Report. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but there's a scene where he's walking through like the streets of, I don't know what city it is, maybe DC or something. And they can all these ads identify him by looking at his retinal scans. It'll be the same thing except with voice, where like, there is no privacy. There's no privacy in public whatsoever, period. I mean, everybody knows exactly where you are all the time, and you're identified and pinpointed by either corporations or the police or whatever.
Speaking of being able to recognize voices, are you guys up to try to recognize the listener's voice? I think he's got his mic working now. Hello, John.
I'm Reddit user XXRage, if you want to yell at me about my microphone quality. Am I coming through okay now?
Yeah, that's much better now.
Yeah, we're still going to flame you really bad, John, but no problem.
Yeah, at first, there's a question, something I've thought about. If you, like, let's say, you know, a lot of people start using things like gold and silver and use it more of like a barter currency. One of the things I thought about is, let's say some disaster happens and really there's, it's sort of like a post-apocalyptic situation. Things are kind of crazy. How do you think that people would confirm things like gold and silver if people didn't really have access to any of those, you know, sonic tests or anything like that? It would just kind of be on good faith, or the old pirate thing where you bite onto the coin, if it bends enough,
thing. I mean, but obviously the pirate thing fools voice scanners, so it's also going to work for identifying gold and silver coins too. It's a solution to everything, actually.
Well, yeah, I think the market's pretty good at that. Look at, you know, the tests the drug dealers use to make sure that the stuff that they're dealing in is good stuff. You know, I think there's probably things that are going to be developed and released in the market, and people will need them to have the confidence in the money if they're going to be using physical, you know, physical currency. They're going to need that confidence. But, you know, there's also that option that something like Bitcoins could come into play too.
You do need electricity for them to work in a working internet connection. I don't know. I mean, if we're assuming that there's some sort of natural disaster, maybe utilities are a little sketch, and people need emergency supplies because power's been out for 2 weeks or something, which could happen. I mean, look at what happened with Katrina. The area was completely devastated. If people had gold and silver to trade with, they might actually be able to get supplies that they needed, as opposed to sitting around waiting for FEMA to get around to helping them and twiddling their thumbs and having to loot stores because there were no supplies. I remember seeing a picture. Oh god, it was really funny. I saw a picture. This is a bit of a tangent, but I saw a picture from Katrina, and it was this white guy wading through water to get a whole bunch of supplies. And the caption in the newspaper read, "You know, I think it was residents desperately trying to get necessary supplies." And then there was another picture from another newspaper, which had a black person in it, and it said, "Looters raiding vacant stores."
Oh yes, so, the racist so media.
So bad.
Yeah, a lot
George
of
Bush doesn't care about black people.
Hey, when I first saw that article on the tungsten thing, that was one of the things I was thinking about. Is that Bitcoins might even, you know, I mean, obviously we're gonna have to see where it goes, but it may actually end up being somewhat more valuable than gold because, I mean, who's to say? Let's say, you know, 150 years from now, we're actually starting to colonize other planets or something, or whenever that would take place. If Bitcoin is still around, technically at that point, let's say we find some giant, you know, a moon that underneath the surface is there's tons of gold, that could technically still devalue it. However, we do know exactly how many. Yeah, or asteroids, anything like that. But we do know that there's only going to be a certain amount of Bitcoin. So they may end up being more valuable than even gold if, you know, unless quantum computers break that. But I think I've read that they even have potential solutions to that.
Yeah, quantum computers don't actually provide the necessary type of computing power to break Bitcoin. So the thing with Bitcoin, it's not broken. Like, the encryption itself, RSA keys and stuff cannot be broken, period. That just, like, it's a mathematical thing. The host Toasty Time could explain it better if he were here, because I'm not a mathematician, he is. But it can't be broken, basically, in terms of with all the computing power in the world and the lifetime of the universe or something. It's crazy.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to bring up, and I've been thinking about this a lot, just looking at kind of the squabbling a little bit between people of the anarchism subreddit and, you know, people who are more libertarian. And one of the things is, you know, they like to say, if you're capitalist, you're not a real anarchist. And
that's 100% true.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is, when if I think we might have a better claim to that title, as it seems like every time you ask them how you know, how property would be determined, they say, oh, you know, your local group will determine it democratically, but that's somehow, you know. But regardless of that, one of the things that I've noticed is, if I talk to people, I've just tried this idea, I've talked to people about my beliefs, you know, friends or something like that, and, you know, if they straight up ask me, like, so you think that there should be no government? And I said, yeah, I don't think that. So you're an anarchist. That I can come back with, well, no, because people who call themselves anarchists believe this. And I'll explain to them sort of the, at least the stuff that I've heard from those subreddits, the reading material that they've pointed me to, what they believe property rights to be. And most people that I talk to say, wow, like, that's, I don't want property rights to be like that. I like your, you know, I may not agree with your ideas of a lack of a government, but I definitely like your property rights idea more than people who claim to have the term anarchism. So I don't know if that's necessarily something that other you know, libertarian-minded, you know, or anarcho-capitalist-minded people want to do, but I've had better success talking to people with that, because then they'll be like, oh, well, that doesn't sound quite as bad as, you know, flaming, you know, skull people on motorcycles, so.
Yeah. And John, what was your Reddit name, so we get it right? You said it's XXX.
It's double X rage, so XX rage.
Double X rage, as in rage quit, or as in rage when you make Reddit comments?
Yes, as in rage quit. Rage when I read the anarchism subreddit. Very nice. But,
hey,
did we lose Ron?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Ron?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Yeah, we hear you.
Okay, great. So XX rage. When you get into these discussions, these sound like IRL or real life discussions, where you start talking about people start coming after you and trying to pigeonhole you, at least name you an anarchist, right?
Yeah. And I've been able to kind of, you know, say, well, not according to them. Like, that's, you know, maybe you believe that saying I don't believe in a government makes me an anarchist, but a lot of people who claim that title believe these. And I'll just list, and I won't even, you know, use any language to try to put down what they believe. I'll just straight up tell them the things that I've heard. And yeah, they end up saying, well, yeah, that seems kind of not very anarchistic. And I said, well, yeah, I agree with you.
So it kind of, it kind of, point where, no, you're ducking and diving to try to avoid the categorization, because you know the association, you're wise to it. It comes up a lot. I mean, you might have heard us talk about here, but you know, even more common is trying to avoid being called not conservative or not Republican or not Democrat. As soon as you get cast on the other side, and this is, you know, this is just, again, my two cents. When I get in a conversation, I try desperately to avoid getting put into any of these categorizations. So if I was in your shoes, you know, this is just me. So it sounds like you're doing pretty well in, you know, in your conversation with people based on what you're saying. But if I heard somebody trying to say, okay, oh, so you're an anarchist, I would just, you know, I try to steer away from that word. I the whole idea of you're technically correct, or that's what the word means, but I don't like that association. That is so far from where I want the conversation to be, when I'm just trying to tell them that I don't like violence, that I just try to avoid it. And the conversations will get awkward. It doesn't really make sense for, I mean, and hopefully this helps you, but it doesn't really make sense for the way that I kind of dive away from these things. I'll usually say, I just don't like violence. You know, I'll just keep it these pithy statements of unobjectionable matter. Like, I believe in voluntarism. Voluntarism is kind of a great new term, because, you know,
oh, yeah, that's something I do use a lot.
In contrast to anarcho-capitalism, yeah, Turner likes a lot too, and I think we're kind of trending as a group to kind of use it, is because it's so hard to kind of spin that in a bad way, right? Rage, I guess that's probably part of the reason you enjoy it.
Well, one of the things I've thought about that too is, even people who are far left, if they still believe in, you know, our property rights, you know, they may think, they usually may not really see the coercion in government, but they're not going to say that, oh, you can only possess something. Like, that's to most people, I think, that unless they've really, you know, gone in and they call themselves a Marxist, you know, or reading a Proudhon, I can't remember how to pronounce his name, they generally still have the same, you know, views about property rights. So, you know, if you say, well, you know, I believe in voluntary actions, they're going to see if they can really see, you know, the coercion underneath it.
My idea is if you get that far in the conversation, if you say you have someone who's gifted and they're able to see outside the box, right? If you're talking to somebody who's using the words anarchist, who's talking about property rights, this is a more introspective person. This is someone who's not going to just be, I'm a Democrat, what are you? I'm a Republican, what are you? You're fortunate in that regard that you've got somebody who can kind of at least think outside the box. So you're partway there, and that's a good sign. I think you mean the best use of your time, and you know, again, this is what I found recently, is you see if they're like an anarcho-communist, how far they've gone, how far they've tried to understand on a technical level these definitions of property rights. If you're the first one to teach them to it, if that's new, I would be optimistic, because you can kind of say, hey, you know, I agree with everything you're saying, except, you know, property rights might be defined this way. If they've already stared that in the face, if they've already kind of defined those and said, I don't care, it's violence, property is violence, this is the way it's got to be, I'm not so optimistic that you're going to be able to get that conversation and go farther. And unfortunately, it might be a good time to eject. You know.
Yeah, I think that part of the thing it almost seems like a waste of time to really, I mean, it's interesting. Don't get me wrong. I like, you know, reading like, you know, Debate a Communist, because you get into some, you know, some interesting discussions with at least some of the people there who are well read on, you know, things like Rothbard. Certainly. So that at least, you know, but I think the average person, we don't really have to worry about having those really, you know, esoteric arguments that they already believe in the same property rights that, you know, voluntarists do. They just don't see the way.
I was going to say, the average person doesn't have arguments for their positions in general. Most people that you'll talk to maybe kind of rationalize a few silly arguments that don't have any significant solidity to them. And other than that, they're pretty much basing their entire political opinions on what they see around them in their social environment, what their friends and especially their family take as their position, whatever they think is popular, whatever they think will get them status in their social groups. And especially they'll take it for whatever makes them feel good and whatever they can project. So the way politics really works is that politicians get up there and they talk about people's fears, and they ask people, you know, to put faith in them, the politician, such that, you know, they get a whole bunch of power, and they're going to use that power to alleviate their fears. So people just want to project the alleviation of their own worries and fears onto politicians, and that's all politics is. That's it. And when you get around to that, you realize that most people, when you approach them with the anarcho-capitalist argument, the voluntarist argument, you're going up basically their ability to shove all their worries and fears off onto some imaginary entity called the state and to shove it onto politicians' shoulders, and then it's not their responsibility anymore. You know, what if the poor don't get fed? Well, that's okay, because this guy, you know, that works for the government says he'll take care of it, so clearly it's going to get done. You know, what about, you know, protecting the rights of minorities or keeping us safe from terrorists or something? And, you know, we go and we project that onto politicians and we project that onto the state so that we don't have to think about it. So it's very, very hard to get people to admit that there are things which they don't need to necessarily be so concerned about, or need to take it up upon themselves to deal with the problem and show responsibility.
Yeah.
Hey, Rage, in your experience, the people that are self-defined anarcho-communists, do they seem, you know, do they seem like well-intentioned? Do they seem good people? Do they seem like they want to help? Do they seem frustrated? What's your read on the ones you've discussed with? Because I know you've said it was interesting. Maybe when you push a little farther, it's frustrating, but
we lost the bridge. We're not even, I don't think we're even broadcasting anymore.
Oh, painful.
Yeah.
Well, we're still recording, so. Well, the show will go on.
Yeah. He rage quit on us, or so did the stream, I guess.
We've been hacked. Oh, no.
Well, there's some thunderstorms going on. I don't know.
Oh, shit.
Well, the thing I was gonna try to ask him was to try to get people to realize that if they've already agreed with the voluntarist perspective on property, then they've kind of already agreed without necessarily realizing it that the state is something that should not exist. And to try to just try to help them reach that logical conclusion. If you take those kinds of property rights, which is essentially just the non-aggression principle applied to property, you have to end in a situation where the state is no longer in existence, or is at least not supported. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I, for one, kind of follow what you're saying. The logic is pretty sound, but to me, it seems like a lot of times these people who are self-described anarcho-communists, there's not really a pure logical conclusion. I think there's been so many forays, so many adventures from people from the lively ANCAP community into debate of communists, into our anarchism, where they tend to get banned. I think probably most people listening or casting right now are banned there. I'm not, so lol. But it seems like there's an underlying theme. There's this need for greed, and no matter what you put forth, it's not going to be satiated. They're still going to point out to this inherent evil in the world, this pervasive greed that you has to be snuffed out, and there's no real way to do it. It just seems like you can't get there with logic. Even if the logic's sound, like you just said, wrong, I'm not so sure that that'll be an ultimate sell, or if there is an ultimate sell.
Yeah, you can't use reason and evidence with people who have already clearly rejected reason and evidence. It does, you know, it's just not going to work. You have to make, if you really want to keep going, you have to make some kind of an emotional appeal to these people, to reel them in. But the problem with that is the next time they start thinking emotionally about some other problem, they could just resort right back to a state solution, because it's what they know, and it's, like you said, it's the culture that they're in.
Yeah, I mean, do we need to really put it on our shoulders to convince them to find the right key? Because if they've kind of dug their feet in the ground and they said, okay, this is a view I'm going to have, neener, 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 no matter what anyone else says, I'm happy just to let them be on their way and do their thing.
I try to give them a bit of a litmus test. And I think
the bridge is back, so...
Oh, good. We were talking about talking to people if you guys are catching us. Oh, it's gone again. Oh, well. Anyway,
I think we're on recording for the rest of this.
Yeah. I kind of give people a litmus test, though, that kind of similar to what Stefan Molyneux does with his against me argument, except I don't quite... I try not to make it so adversarial, but I'll say to a person, you know, you agree that it's okay for me to disagree with having to pay taxes to support a war effort that we both abhor. And, you know, most of the time they'll agree, you know, like, yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Well, and, I'm just going to stop you really quick, because okay. I've encountered a lot of people. I make the argument, it's pretty much the same argument you're going down the line with, which is that you disagree with some things the state does. Everybody does.
Yeah.
Nobody agrees with 100%. Obviously, if they agreed 100%, we wouldn't have political parties, and we wouldn't have all this nonsense political bickering.
Anarcho-totalitarianism.
So, yeah. So what we basically have is you ask them, you know, wouldn't you prefer not to have to fund these things? And people will make up these incredible rationalizations for why they have to. Well, that's just, it's the law, you know, that's the price we pay for a free society. That's how democracy works.
The social contract.
You know, if you don't like it, you can join the government and try to change it. You can pressure your representatives to change it. You have to work within the system, man. And I hear these things all the time. I mean, it's just, it literally is nonstop.
Yeah, but so, what you're trying to do is get past that. They've kind of already said that. You're trying to get past that by saying, you know, okay, so you still kind of support that, but what you've just told me is that if I think it's immoral to give the state money so that they can go kill people who've never done anything to me, that you would support me being thrown in a cage for that, when you just told me that's something that you also find abhorrent. So how does that make sense? You know what I mean? If you wouldn't put me in a cage yourself, how can you be comfortable paying somebody to do it for you? You know, if you're uncomfortable with the immorality of that, it's not like a, well, I just don't want to get my hands dirty type of thing. It's really a, I find that act abhorrent. I would never do it myself because I think it's immoral, or if you're moving from a consequentialist argument, I think it's just a bad idea, period. Why in the hell would you think it okay to pay other people to do it for you.
Well, you're just being ideological. You got to be pragmatic in this real world. Understand, if you want to get things done, you know, somebody's got to give when somebody else is taking, you know?
Well, where guns are being pointed, I suppose that holds true.
I just wanted to announce really quick. I think we're back streaming finally. I'm going to jinx it by saying that. But I want to give a big thanks to our caller, XX Rage, there. John, thanks for calling in. We'll have you in for the next book raffle. And feel free to call in again. And, of course, anybody else who wants to call in, please call in. We will talk about anything you want.
We're lonely.
Yeah, we really enjoy the company.
Yeah, anarcho-capitalists only exist on the internet, and we have no friends.
Mr. Rage he's not afraid of a pretty deep thought experiment, as evidenced by his space mining 150 years into the future. And it was interesting to hear about his conversation with ANCOMs in the flesh, because that's
hold on. Not always I just easy had a brilliant do. Idea. What if we combined space mining with robots with Minecraft? So you play like Minecraft, but you're actually mining asteroids for money.
There's already a game like that. It's called Mine Things. They advertise it on LRN.fm all the time.
But that doesn't actually control robots that really are mining things, is it?
Yeah.
Is that how it works? Is that really how it works?
That's part of the game, yes.
Hammett, you heard the commercial?
As advertised. Yeah, I mean, aren't you hip? Aren't you cool?
I've heard it advertised. I just didn't... I don't know. I haven't listened to Free Talk Live in a bit, so...
Mark, your mining robot guys run 24 hours a day.
Yeah, he says it. He says that the robots mine the asteroids for you.
But I'm talking about real asteroid mining. I mean, like, real life stuff. I'm not talking about, like, virtual stuff.
Oh, well, when you said Minecraft, then I thought you meant a video game.
No, I mean, like, you log in to a game, and you're, like, playing the game, but you're actually telling the robots to go and do things. So, like, it'll have a feed going back and forth from, like, this spacecraft or
kind of like Ender's Game, but for mining robots.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be exactly like that. And you know, we'll discover a race of alien insects and have to go and
we'll be fight them in a big war. And then by Orson Scott Card.
Yeah.
Can we make the robots fight each other too?
That would
be Rock'em Sock'em robots.
I love Rock'em Sock'em robots.
You see, because we'd all turn into greedy capitalists, we'd form robot cartels and go and do battle instead of working to actually make money. And then a centralized power structure would have to step in to bring peace to the space robot colony. And it would be like Transformers.
Robots in your fries or something like that. I don't know. I'm not very good on movies.
I should hope not. That would be interesting in a bad way. So why don't we pull another topic out of our bucket here? We've got, what's this about Anonymous declaring war on Philadelphia? What does that even mean? Is a bunch of people in V masks going to go throw rotten eggs at people in the street? Or what are they?
I don't know what they're doing.
I gotta hear. If you give me a second, I gotta dig through my folders here. Wait, okay, I'm looking. I got the UFO story. Oh, here it is. I'll try to scan this. So apparently, it was over this guy, and I don't think we talked about it, but it was bouncing around on Reddit for a while about the guy in Philadelphia who owned some kind of business. And there was like a garbage lot across the street from her, from his place of business. It was just like an unkept vacant lot. He tried to buy it, and the city told him no. He tried to offer money for somebody to clean it up, and the city told him no. So basically, he went in himself and spent more than $20,000 fixing up this vacant lot. I saw part of the video, or was it a video? Yeah, a video in stills.
Yeah, the video. It had a picture of it. It looked really good.
Oh, it looked great. I mean, he brought in backhoe, cleared the land, brought in gravel, put in a little fence and some park benches and other landscaping. It looked great. And now the city's saying he's got to tear it down because they're calling him a trespasser. If you can believe it. Said he was endangering the public. And, but the criticism is that if the city had done the same project, they would have spent like $1.5 million. And, so here did it.
And remember, the city, when it does the project, is not endangering the public. They're doing it for the public. Same action. But remember, they're spending all the public's money, so they're doing it for the good of the public. Whereas this guy's a menace.
Yeah, and now they wanted to put the trash back in the yard to restore it to the state it was before. You know, so where's he going to
put all that trash in their yard? Whichever bureaucrat gave him a notice. Be like, you want the trash back? Here, take the trash. Enjoy it.
Amazing.
Mr. Feibusch, he had cherry trees. He even repaved the sidewalk. You know, and that, you know, that's not cheap, you know?
Well, so, there's a quote-unquote conspiracy theory that he put forth, which is completely realistic and probably valid, which is that a lot of times what will happen is cities will let these areas go to complete shit so that they can declare them blighted areas, force everybody out, demolish the place, and put up new like high-rises or expensive luxury apartments and stuff to increase property values. And have more rich people move in. And why? Because I can get more tax revenue.
Well, that seems like a bit of an extreme theory. I mean,
well, they do it all the time. I remember seeing, I think it was this video series from Reason TV. Drew Carey was doing this video series. And one of the things he was doing was following this, I think it was in LA, this neighborhood where the government wanted to come and declare it a blighted area and wipe it out and put in like expensive apartment buildings. And you know, they fought back. Obviously they wanted to keep their rec center, and they wanted to, I think it was the rec center they wanted to demolish, and they wanted to keep it, and they managed to do so, but it was a big struggle. And this is actually something that occurs. It may not be for the necessary for the property value. It may just be a traditional corporatist thing where maybe somebody in the government is getting kickbacks from the construction companies or something. I don't know, but it does happen.
So Anonymous now, quote, demands that the city of Philadelphia immediately retract all claims of wrongdoing by Mr. Feibusch, and that they seek to arrange amicable compensation for his expenses incurred while doing the government of Philadelphia's job.
But they without say, the government, who will build the roads? And parks.
I think it's a little bit funny from a libertarian-ish point of view. I should say, to be more accurate, a voluntarist point of view, that the government contends that this fellow was trespassing. But if I remember correctly, this property was supposedly owned by the government, and we know that no property owned by the government is actually legitimately owned because it can only be acquired through an aggressive act.
It's a public space.
So
I mean, how can you be trespassing on an unmarked public space?
If you want to go with the public property paradigm, you can use that thing too. So either way, either it wasn't trespassing because it's public property, or it wasn't trespassing because it was unowned property and he had homesteaded it, and therefore it belongs to him.
And it's not like he didn't try. It says here that he visited the local offices of the Redevelopment Authority 4 times, sent in 7 written requests, and made 24 phone calls to the agency requesting that the city take action on this lot. And, you know, and nothing, he got the red tape, he got the, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. you have to turn in this form, please, you know, that kind of stuff. So it says here he removed 40 tons of trash from this lot. You know?
Tons?
40 tons, you know,
and
this is the thanks he gets. Well, it's probably like Detroit, you know, a vacant lot. You got people coming from all over Michigan to dump garbage in it.
No
so
wonder
you don't have
he
to pay
it
disposal
up.
Fees. Yeah.
That's a menace for his own business and property values. I mean, dear God. Yeah, Philadelphia has been a really super corrupt city for a while. I don't know. I haven't been there, but I've heard some pretty bad things from people that I have known who live there. That it is, some sections are extremely unsafe still, and it's just a complete disaster.
One of the oldest cities in North America. Doesn't surprise me that it's so corrupt.
Well, these East Coast cities, all of them are in really bad shape. I mean, look, yep. New York City is a mess. They're bankrupt. Their schools are prisons, literally prisons. They can't educate their own kids. I would say, you know, Philadelphia, but Boston's probably one of the better off places. Even though it's in Massachusetts, probably because their taxes are so ridiculously high, and they're just full of, like, rich people and don't have the rest of the state to support.
And also, Romney was so brave in that state.
Oh yeah,
probably helped.
So brave.
Well, they're doing good around the D.C. area. I saw another article said that, what was it, 7 or 12 of the richest counties in the country are right around the D.C. area.
I live in one.
You know,
Who would have thought?
That money's flowing out. It's like a fountain.
You wouldn't know there was a recession here. You don't know that there is. I mean, construction has been all over the place, nonstop. This summer, they redid every major road in my county. Like, they just completely repaved them. At once, of course, because they're assholes and they want to shut down traffic. If you've been to the DC area, you should understand one thing. You cannot possibly get worse traffic. You can't do it. I know LA. People say LA's bad. People say Boston's bad. No, DC is worse. I swear to God it's worse. It is so bad.
I almost want to go just to see it, just to say no. Just to say nope. LA's worse. But I'll hold on for now.
Toasty Times in chat, because he lives in this area too. And he's just like, I was killed 100 people on the way here. And it's a disaster. And of course, they've been building this bridge by my house for about 2 years now or something. They haven't finished it. They're never working on it. It's just like a permanent construction site. I never seen them do anything. I feel like they've gone through multiple contractors and nobody wants to do any work. It's a complete boondoggle, of course. And I'm so angry.
That's one of those instances where you can just see the state, just the lack of incentives leading to the boondoggle you described. Everyone has to have the experience of just this road that's got an extra lane coming.
I need to relay what Toast just said. I saw road workers on the side taking shots while I was stopped behind a steamroller. So I guess it was like just behind a piece of equipment that they were moving from site to site.
A steamroller's got to be one of the types of shots.
Taking shots? Was that like the shooter who was like, you know, hiding in his trunk and shooting at people?
No, I'm pretty sure it's referring to alcohol.
Was it Wild Irish Rose or Mad Dog?
Yeah, alcohol. It was probably some sort of tequila.
that was nice of him to at least come out on the construction site to drink, you know? It's like, you're halfway there at that point.
Yeah, I know. Actually, you know, hopefully they might get so drunk that they don't know what they're doing and actually work.
Like, accidentally dig a hole over here.
Oh man, we accidentally finished the project. God damn it. Now we have to go home and find a new project so we can stand and drink some more.
Stimulate the economy.
Break some windows.
Yeah, if the workers get drunk and then get injured and destroy the bridge, then they've stimulated the economy because of workman's comp and the insurance payments on all the damaged construction equipment, and they'll have to build the new bridge.
Are you sure
that was
you don't have a Nobel Prize, Ron?
To begin with.
Again. Are you sure you don't have a Nobel Prize?
Well, you've caught me. I'm actually Paul Krugman in disguise.
It's not a Nobel Prize. It's a prize in the name of Alfred Nobel. It is not a true Nobel Prize.
I'm Paul Krugman in disguise. I have a voice changer. And don't ask me about the Bob Murphy debate, because I'll just leave.
His quote-unquote Nobel Prize, I think, is actually in a different area, too, than macroeconomics. I thought it was trade theory or something like that.
It actually is real work. That's the sad part. Like, he did real economics that was good, and then he became this hack that doesn't do anything but just shout out for the Democratic Party. It's a complete disaster.
Hey, man, if you cuddle up with the state as an intellectual, you get lots of goodies. It's a nice life.
Yeah.
Been doing it for thousands of years, man.
The intellectual, the priest classes, as
people would say.
This weekend, I finally read all, I guess it would be a chapter, but I finally read Rothbard's Anatomy of the State. I got through the whole thing. And the way that guy has with words and the way he talks about how the state needs intellectuals, and I guess intellectuals kind of enjoy the state because of that security they give them. I mean, that's amazing. He really lays it out.
I have a question. So, Ron, like, in the Anatomy of the State, did he talk about what the heck the uvula was for? You know what I'm talking about?
The flat thing in the back of the throat?
Yeah. What does that do for the state?
That is what Krugman uses to vocalize his nonsense. I think it gives him a few guttural vowel sounds, some trills. It helps articulate things. Is that the direction you're going?
I have no idea where I'm going with this.
I am the uvula of the state.
Is it uvula or uvula? Or I don't know what the heck that.
Just as far as anatomy, what part's needed and what's not. I'm pretty sure the anatomy of the state, a lot of it you can get rid of. And so it reminds me a lot of my tonsils.
So it's all an appendix. It's just like one giant appendix.
And tonsils. And left pinky toe.
Got it.
That's a fact. Yeah, it's all in there.
Bizarre.
It's like Gray's for the state. Gray's anatomy.
What about your tailbone? Do you need your tailbone? Does it do anything?
For me, it indicates when I'm excited. Apparently, because we'd like to talk about random tech news. Apparently there is such a thing now, I'll let you guys know, that you can, it's got to be like an Asian craze because that's where else is going to come from, but you can get something that somehow hooks up to you and alerts people to your state, to your how excited you are, how sad you are, and your tail will indicate accordingly. Not a real tail.
So like a mood stone for your ass?
Exactly. Exactly that. You got it.
I believe there's an ears.
Where can I get
too.
One of these things?
The inner tubes. The internet is like a series of tubes, and just yesterday morning I had my staff send out some inner tubes to hopefully make that happen.
It's not just a big truck that you can just dump something on. Just to make it clear, a lot of people have that misconception, and you've got massive commerce going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions about how the tubes work, and I mean, us here on Decline Estate, we're really trying to get the word out, and we appreciate our listeners for their bravery as we promulgate the truth
about the inner tubes.
Yes, about the tubes
and aliens.
We're totally off topic here.
Yeah, I think we're probably done.
Are we going to wrap it up?
I think it's about time to wrap it up. But I wanted to mention, I guess we have some guests that still need to come on the show. And I just wanted to announce a few people that we have in the works, so people get their hopes up and get all excited and their tails light up and stuff.
Are we at the point where we can start charging people for coming on the show?
Not yet.
I think we could stop paying them, though. That'd be good. We don't actually do that. We're too cheap.
Yeah.
But I think we have Tom Woods in the lineup at some point. I know we were talking to Freedom Fiends, and
we're actually having the Fiends on next
Friedman,
Wednesday.
That's right.
Next Wednesday, the Fiends are coming on.
That is correct.
Very nice.
And then David Friedman, we're supposed to interview him at some point as well. So we'll have a good couple interviews coming up. And check out the Walter Block interview. I believe this is just posted up now. You also could have heard it on the Sunday show. That show is posted. Good interview.
Good,
and I would say that we have quite a lineup coming up. So definitely, you know, call into the show, because you can get in a raffle for one of these guys if they have books out. I know Tom Woods has several books out, and he may give us a couple copies to hand out to you guys. So call in. Do it.
Call in, get on
get
that
a free
raffle.
Book. Even if you hate this show or you only just heard of it, get a free book.
Just use us. If you hate us, then use us to do all the labor to get you a free book.
Yeah, we do all the work, man.
We'll take your name down, and then you can talk all the shit in the world to us, and then we'll give you a free book anyway.
You could even be someone like Sci Every Day or Rep Mac and call in here and say things that make no sense, and we'd still put you in the raffle.
I think we also have a raffle going on right now that, of course, Excess Rage is entered into, is for the Walter Block interview. He has a book that he'll give us. I assume it's, I'm not sure which book it is. Might be a user choice. Yeah, any book you want. So
if I had my choice, I would pick the next edition of Defending the Undefendable.
Yeah, Defending the Undefendable 2 is coming out, I think, the end of this year, I believe. He wanted to wait to get it out. But,
if not then next year.
Yeah, I think it's like early next year at the latest. And then Defending the Undefendable 3 is in the progress.
Yes.
Well, does he have new cartoons in there?
I hope so.
You'll have to listen to the interview.
He doesn't actually do them. He pays somebody else for them. Yeah. But they're pretty amusing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I just finished the first edition. So now I wish I'd have waited so I'd get the second. So now I've got to, you know, I guess I'll have to get it and find the new sections and read through again.
The cliffhanger, man. Just look at it that way.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great book. I really enjoyed it. Good stuff. I can see why people were irritated, but it's a lot of good points. I can't, you know, I'm waiting for the opportunity to tell people about, you know, why pimps are good for the country. And why.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, good times. So
also,
anyways,
Zom says that we might be ready to do it now, and I just plugged something into
her. I think next week. We'll do it next week.
We want to wait a little bit? Okay.
Yeah, I think we're about the 90-minute mark, so if you wanted to take us out.
Let's do it. My voluntarist cohorts, this is Ronald McPaul. It's about 11:30 Eastern Standard America time, and the sun has long since set over the West Coast now that winter is coming. We welcome you to check out the archives and track our progress as we continue to spread the message on declinefm.com and Decline to State on iTunes. Remember, if there's a topic you want to hear discussed on the show, please submit to r/declinetostate on Reddit. And also get user declinetostate saved on Skype, like XXRage has, so you're ready to call in. We continue to work on getting improved design and content on the Decline FM website, so look forward to it. And I would like to remind you that Decline Estate is still brought to you free of charge, as well as commercial free. A big thanks to all of our hosts, tech experts, researchers, contributors, listeners, and our caller. Decline Estate is a group effort motivated by our love of liberty, as well as capitalist bow ties and free market monocles. So when asked, always decline Estate.
This is Eternal. Have a good night, everybody.
This is Kwashiorkor reminding you to count your tungsten coins.
Wrong Opinion signing off from the Rust Belt. Keep it real, folks. We'll be right back.